Thanks everyone for being here. I'm from our Behavioral Health Administration, and I'm going to talk about buprenorphine prescribing. And real quick, so you all can get your CEs, this presentation will mention the potential for off-label use of a drug. So for those of you who may not be familiar, buprenorphine is a partial opioid agonist that's been prescribed in the U.S. for the last 17 years or so in the use of treatment of opioid use disorder. However, it's also approved for FDA. The FDA has also approved it for use in pain management. The federal government regulates it very closely for treatment purposes. Doctors have to go through a whole training process in order to become waivered and can only carry a certain number of patients at any given time to whom they're prescribing buprenorphine. In August, those caps changed, and so now there's 30, 100, and 275 are the amounts of patients that are allowed. And pretty soon we should be able to see mid-level providers, nurse practitioners, and physician's assistants also be able to prescribe, but my understanding is nobody's implemented that yet. We're still waiting on some training stuff. However, because of this, it does make it a little bit harder for people to find doctors who can prescribe this when they want it or need it for treatment. So in Maryland, that's been something that we're working very hard on doing is increasing our treatment capacity. We're looking at a couple of goals, including increasing the cap levels for physicians who are already waivered, getting physicians to make sure that they're carrying a full or close to full load of patients, and then making sure that we have a widespread availability across our state of providers who can write these prescriptions. So this comes from the DEA registrant file. This is the primary source of information about who is waivered. And what I wanted people to see in this chart is just that if you look at the proportion of physicians in Maryland who are waivered at various levels versus the proportion in total U.S., we're actually doing okay in the main three cap levels. But at the very bottom corner, you can see that only about 3.6% of our physicians have any waiver status, which is very small. And so we really would like to see that number grow. So the Behavioral Health Administration, luckily, is not only the agency that coordinates treatment provision, but also does a lot of our overdose work and houses our PDMP. So it was very easy for us to be able to use our PDMP data to try to get a better handle on what is actually happening in buprenorphine prescribing in our state. A couple of caveats, I'm going to give lots of caveats, I think, throughout this talk, but this can only capture buprenorphine that's dispensed in a pharmacy. It doesn't cover opioid treatment programs or any office-based prescribing that's protected under 42 CFR Part 2. So this will be an underestimate of what actually is happening, but it can supplement other information we have about what's happening in those locations. Again, we talked about mid-level providers. And then finally, veterinarians do prescribe buprenorphine, and in our state at least, they should be reporting this to the PDMP, but I have not pulled them out in this report, so take it with a grain of salt. Okay, so what we did is we did a 16-month look back all of last year plus the first 4 months of this year in our PDMP data. Based on a label review of all FDA-approved buprenorphine-containing products that I did last fall, we basically said that for our analysis, we're going to consider prescriptions that have Belbuca or Butrans to be pain formulations, and then any other prescription we're considering for opioid use disorder treatment. This is in line with CDC's directions on our recent prevention for state grant indicators, but I realize that this does like really tip the balance in terms of what's being considered for treatment. So there's a lot of wiggle room that we want to investigate further in this. And then just so everybody knows, under Data 2000, a provider could prescribe something like Suboxone that is quote unquote a treatment formulation for pain without penalty. However, they couldn't prescribe something like Butrans for treatment that would be considered a penalty. So we don't actually know based on dispense records what the prescriber is writing for. So this again is just like an assumption that we have to make in trying to do this analysis. Okay. So what did we see? So in this time period, the 16 months, buprenorphine accounted for 5.4% of all controlled substance prescriptions that were dispensed in Maryland. Of those fills, 97% were for a treatment formulation, Suboxone being the most popular followed by Zubsolv, and then by generic buprenorphine tablets. And then I actually went through and looked, pulled out all of the provider information that we had, and then deduplicated it by hand, matching on name, because a lot of providers have multiple DEA numbers that they can provide under different locations. So I was able to identify 2,448 unique prescribers that prescribed at least one time during this time period. Of that, 70% wrote for a treatment formulation only, 23.5 wrote only for pain, and then 6.25 wrote at least two prescriptions, one of each kind. Okay, so when we look at their waiver status, a number of about 8% actually we could not match back to the DEA file because of missing or invalid DEA numbers, including X codes. And then the about 40% were not waivered at all in any state. And then you can see the distribution for the rest. About 21.5% were waivered at 100 patients at that kind of mid-level range. And we actually saw an impressive amount, 12.2 at 275, which is good considering that's only been available since August. I know everybody hates pie charts, but for some reason I went to a pie chart instead of a bar chart. On the right hand, if you break out based on just the folks that prescribed for pain, you can see that the vast majority of folks, whether they were a Maryland-based prescriber or somebody whose primary DEA number was based in a different state, are not waivered, which is fine. We expect that. However, if you look at our the people who were prescribing, we think, for treatment, two things that I wanted to pull out of this. One is that about 44% had a primary practice location outside of the state of Maryland. And the other thing is that about 25% overall, 19% of those within Maryland are prescribing and do not appear to have a data waiver. And that could be based on the fact that this the data waiver, the document that I use for data waiver is kind of a point in time, and it's possible that they had one and lapsed or, you know, are in the process of getting it. But that's a concerningly large number, and we really want to dig into what's actually happening. Are these people maybe prescribing for pain? Or are they just prescribing because they know that their patients need it? And then just for the folks that did both, most of those people were in state and about half of them were waivered. And then looking at our regional information, so the regions that are used here are the same ones that we use to report out our overdose numbers. So I think if you look at the far side of the top column, this is all just within our PDMP data again. Of the prescribers that prescribed during this time period, I calculated the proportion of them that were waivered, and you can see that less than half are in any given region have a waiver status. So that suggests that maybe the burden is falling on, is not evenly distributed. This didn't account for the treatment versus pain thing, but still kind of lower numbers than we would like to see. And then in the bottom, I was able to do some preliminary work on, we're still working on making sure that we can really identify individual patients in our data set, but I was able to kind of, numbers that I'm okay with on how many people, how many individual patients were there. And if you look at this ratio of the number of patients who received a prescription that we think is for treatment versus how many prescribers in that region, you can see that all of them are above, with the exception of the nation's capital region, are above that primary limit of 30, and then most of them also are kind of under the next cap limit as well, or in between. And so basically this also just indicates that the burden is really high on the providers that do exist. If we were hopefully just seeing the providers that are waivered, may not be able to fulfill the capacity of people who are in need of this drug. A couple quick takeaways too. If you look at the actual people who do have waivers, most of them do seem to be writing, have written at least one prescription in this time period, which is good. The place where that falls apart is the folks who have a 30 patient cap. Less than half of them appeared to prescribe in this time period, which, given that it's a 16 month period, you would hope they would write at least one in that year. And so we really need to make sure that folks who do have the waiver are being connected to patients who need the treatment. So that's another group that we want to look into and understand where that connection is being missed. And then we're really interested in the fact that so many, about a third of the prescribers appear to be based out of state. Maryland is a small state, and we have like five or six bordering jurisdictions, and you can also get to a lot of other places very easily. So this could be due to some poor data. But it also could be that it's just easier in some locations for folks to go across the border to get the treatment that they need. So we really want to understand what's happening there so we can make sure that Maryland residents are finding what they need within our state, and also that we're working in coordination with our neighbors to make sure that we're not putting putting burden on their folks. And I do want to mention that there also were people from other states that appeared to be getting prescriptions within our state. So there's a little bit of give and take there. Okay, so for those of you who haven't worked with PDMP data, there, you know, it's a massive data set, as my colleagues have mentioned. These are just a couple of the things that, like, I would prefer we're a little bit less messy about working with it, and we really do want to, we've had PDMP data since 2013, but we're really only now getting a chance to staff up and really work on data quality. So especially with the issue of DEA numbers and making sure we have DEA numbers that are valid and can be connected back to other data sets where that's a linking information, we're trying really hard. But for right now, this is data that we're finding really helpful in figuring out how to deploy resources across our state. And if anybody'd like to chat with me, please do. And I'd like to specifically thank Kate Jackson, who's our PDMP manager, for getting me started down the road of figuring this out, and Michael Baer for his support in making sure we're pumping this information out.